In our study tonight and last Wednesday evening, and of course for the next several Wednesday evenings as we continue our study in the book of Daniel, I want you to be impressed with the providence of God. Now, we've emphasized time and time again the theme of the book of Daniel. What is the theme of the book? Randy? God is in control. God rules in the kingdoms of men. And we've noted in Daniel the second chapter, in the last several verses of that chapter, beginning at verse 28, I believe it is, the writer is expressing to us, to Nebuchadnezzar, as Daniel speaks, the things that are to come to pass in the last days. And he identifies in the days of these kings, the God of heaven shall set up a kingdom. What kings was that? Days of the Roman kings, the God of heaven would set up a kingdom. And in the next several chapters, we've read that God rules in the kingdoms of men. Nebuchadnezzar had to learn that, and of course his son had to learn that, Belshazzar. And that statement is made a number of times in the first five, or the implications of the first five books, first five chapters of the book of Daniel. In the next portion of the book of Daniel, and I've got some charts here that I think are out of line. Let me get up to where I want to be. These, of course, impress upon us the significance of the time. We discussed that in our last study. Here we go. In the chapters 1 through 6, we notice that those are relatively easy. But when we get to chapter 7, things begin to bog down just a little. Did you find that to be true in your studies? Chapter 7 through chapter 12 begins to get a little bit more difficult. And just to review a little bit, in the second half of the book, Daniel sees four visions. In Daniel 7, he has a vision of the four beasts. In Daniel chapter 8, he has a vision of the ram and the he-goat. You remember these and remember the lessons from them. And then, of course, the difficult chapter of chapter 9, and especially the last few verses, the vision of the 70 weeks. And then in chapter 10 through the remainder of the chapter, or remainder of the book, we read of the vision of the time of the end in which God reveals to Daniel many things about his purpose and plan in history regarding the nation of Israel and the everlasting kingdom to come. Now these things that pertain to the time of the end, he is not talking about things that pertain to the end of time at the second coming of Christ. But what things is he discussing that are identified as the times of the end? This is the final vision. I can't hear you.
Did he want us to answer that question?
Well, yeah, that's why I asked it. I thought somebody would get around to answering it. All right.
System.
The Jewish entity, everything that pertained to that.
The end of Jerusalem.
All right, that's right. And of course, this vision, beginning in the 10th chapter, as you've said, affects the people of God. It's Daniel being told what's going to happen to the people of God. What will occur, and I find it interesting, the terminology that's used in the 10th chapter and in verse 14, what will befall thy people in the latter days, for the vision is yet for many days. Daniel is being told what is going to come to pass in the latter days. Now that's significant because we've seen and read of the latter days or the last days in Daniel chapter 2. And he's identifying something that is many days yet to come. It's down the pike some distance from the time that Daniel is being addressed. The words were to be closed and sealed till the time of the end, Daniel chapter 12, verse 9. And for such reasons, this vision has been called the vision of the time of the end. But I asked the question a moment ago out of sequence of the charts, what is meant by the time of the end? Well, it's not talking about the return of Christ, but it is talking about the end of God's dealings with Israel and of His covenant with that nation. Now, if you'll turn to Daniel chapter 10, let's notice the first few verses of the chapter. Daniel chapter 10, beginning at verse 1. It says, in the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a thing was revealed unto Daniel, whose name was called Belteshazzar. And the thing was true, even a great warfare. And he understood the thing, and he had understanding of the vision. Now this sets the time frame for us. It occurred in the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, on the 24th day of the first month, we see at verse 4. Now, the thing that was revealed to Daniel, it tells us that Daniel understood it. Now, one of the things that we've noticed a number of times in our previous studies is that Daniel didn't understand. The thing that was revealed to Daniel in previous chapters made Daniel sick. He didn't understand. He pleaded for understanding, and the angel told him, I will make you to understand. But in this text, it tells us that Daniel understood the thing that was revealed to him, and it was true, even a great warfare. We'll talk about that in just a bit. But in verse 2, it says, in those days, I, Daniel, was mourning for 3 whole weeks. Now, don't tell me he was mourning for 3 weeks. I want to know how long was he mourning. Those of you that have studied the chapter, we see it identified a little bit later in the chapter in verse 13. How many days did he mourn? 3 weeks is the equivalent of 21 days. I'm not the mathematician in the family, but I got that. And if you'll notice in verse 13, it identifies the 21 days that someone stood beside him, and we'll talk about that when we get to it. But Daniel was fasting and mourning, verse 3. I ate no pleasant bread, neither came flesh nor wine into my mouth, neither did I anoint myself at all till 3 whole weeks were fulfilled. And in the 24th day of the first month, as I was by the side of the great river, which is Hiddekel. Now, what river is that?
Tigris.
The Tigris River. You've got that in a different translation, don't you? The Tigris River. I lifted up mine eyes and looked, and behold, a man clothed in linen, whose loins were girded with pure gold of Uphaz. His body also was like beryl, and his face was like, or as the appearance of lightning, and his eyes as flaming torches, and his arms and his feet like unto burnished brass, and the voice of his words like the voice of a multitude. Now I want you to notice in this description what Daniel saw, and no doubt how terrifying it must have been to him. He saw a certain man. The certain man is not identified. He said he saw a certain man clothed in linen, whose waist was girded with gold of Uphaz. Now, I don't know the significance of the source of the gold, but nonetheless, it was something that impressed Daniel. His body was like beryl. Now, all I know about that is what I have read, and that's very little. There's very little that is known about this. Some have suggested that it was a stone of a number of different colors, and that it was a very precious stone, precious in its qualities. Now, beyond that, I can't begin to speculate, and I'll tell you something else I won't speculate on, and that's the significance of the gold and the significance of the beryl. All it does is show us someone that's dressed magnificently, and then his face was like lightning, his eyes like torches of fire. You see a description of a man that should, in many respects, make a great impression on you. And it did upon Daniel. His arms and feet like burnished brass in color. His words like the voice of a multitude. Now, as you see these things, you see grandeur. You see splendor. You see a voice with volume speaking to Daniel. Now, Daniel is the only one that saw this vision, although those who were with Daniel, and I think it's noteworthy to simply mention that there were those who were with Daniel. But in Daniel chapter 10, verse 7, and I, Daniel, alone saw the vision. For the men that were with me saw not the vision, but a great quaking fell upon them, and they fled to hide themselves. Now, whatever these men saw or perceived, they perceived something that terrified them. But Daniel was the one who saw the vision. And the man, the glorious man who appeared before Daniel, has some things to tell him. And if you'll notice further, in verses 8 and 9, it says, "So I was left alone and saw this great vision, and there remained no strength in me, for my comeliness was turned in me into corruption, and I retained no strength. Yet heard I the voice of his words. And when I heard the voice of his words, then was I fallen into a deep sleep, and my face, or on my face, with my face toward the ground." When Daniel saw this, his strength was gone from him. His vigor turned into frailty. Now, one of the things Richard and I were talking about before time for class to begin is about how old Daniel was by this time. And we might just add that up. He was a youth when he was taken into Babylonian captivity. The captivity itself spanned 70 years. And Daniel remained in Babylon, as it were, beyond the 70 years of captivity, as the kingdom of Babylon had been overthrown by the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians. And now he's serving in the palace of Cyrus. Now, how old would that make Daniel? If you were to guesstimate it, what would that put him at? Pardon me, Carolyn?
At least in
his
80s.
I'd say 100. I'd say pretty close to 100. He's up into his 90s at least. So he's an old man. And typically, when someone is into their 90s or close to 100, they're very frail. I had the opportunity just a few weeks ago to ride in the automobile with a 94-year-old driver who was just as sharp and wasn't frail hardly at all for what you would consider a 94-year-old man to be. But yet we see that Daniel, his strength and his vigor turned from him. It tells us that his comeliness turned to corruption. What does that tell us about Daniel? Daniel went limp, as it were, when he saw this vision. Daniel was so impressed with what he saw and so terrified with what he saw that his strength went from him. When he heard the sounds of the man's words, the text tells us that he was in a deep sleep with his face to the ground. We sometimes describe that as a condition where one is prostrate upon the ground, they're looking at the dirt itself, and here's how Daniel describes himself. This is not the only time, by the way, in the 8th chapter. And in verse 18 it says, "Now as he was speaking with me, I fell into a deep sleep with my face toward the ground. But he touched me and set me upright." I want you to remember that in the 8th chapter, because almost the same words are used now in the 10th chapter of the book of Daniel. So this was a great impact that this vision had upon Daniel. Now, of course, the thing that we want to know is, what was it that this glorious man said unto Daniel, and what was the significance of it? Well, let's look at verse 10 of the text. It says, "And behold, a hand touched me, which set me upon my knees and upon the palms of my hands." What's happening? All right, he's fallen to the ground, but he's getting up. And in verse 11, "And he said unto me, O Daniel, thou man greatly beloved." That is a compliment in any realm. But this glorious man says unto Daniel that he is a man greatly beloved. He doesn't say that just once. But if you'll notice back over in the 9th chapter in verse 23, it says, "At the beginning of thy supplications, the commandment went forth, and I am come to tell thee, for thou art greatly beloved. Therefore consider the matter and understand the vision." And then again, in this 10th chapter, in verse 19, it again says, "He said, O man, greatly beloved, fear not." What does that expression suggest to us about Daniel and whatever this glorious man thought of Daniel? Daniel was a great man by any respects. He had proven himself to be great in his youth as he confronted the prince of the eunuchs. He proved himself to be great in the means that he escalated to stand before the king of Babylon and tell him the great things that were to come to pass. And now, throughout Daniel's life, he has worked in the palace of the king. And now here is Cyrus, who is king of the Medo-Persian Empire. And Daniel still is at service unto the king. A man greatly beloved. He is a great man, but he's highly thought of. And we see indication of that three times in the book of Daniel. Now furthermore, in the 10th verse or the 11th verse, he said, "Understand the words that I speak unto thee, and stand upright." Now wait a minute, I thought that Daniel understood. What was it that he understood over here in the 10th chapter, verse 1? All right, he understood some of these things, and he understood that there was a great warfare. Now this great warfare is something that we're not going to speculate on just yet, but in the next few verses we will. Great warfare. And so Daniel is instructed to understand and to stand up. But Daniel stands up, and he stands up trembling. Verse 11 continues, "For unto thee am I now sent." Now I want you to underscore that in your mind. Daniel is unique. This glorious man, whoever that represents, is sent directly to speak unto Daniel. Daniel is honored as a man greatly beloved, to whom this glorious man has been sent to speak directly to him. In verse 11 it continues, "And when he had spoken this word unto me, I stood trembling." Now, there are two or three things, one in particular I want us to think about. The Apostle Paul in the New Testament in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, 1 Corinthians chapter 2, says beginning at verse 2, "For I determined not to know anything among you save Jesus Christ and Him crucified. And I was with you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling." What is it that caused Paul to tremble when he says, "I was with you in trembling"? What role did the Apostle Paul have unto those in Corinth? What's he telling them? Well, now we know the answer to that. 1 Corinthians chapter 2 is not such a difficult chapter. All right, he's been rebuking them and will continue to rebuke them throughout this chapter. But Paul says, "I determined not to know anything among you save Jesus Christ and Him crucified." In verse 1, he said, "When I came unto you, I came not with excellency of speech or of wisdom, proclaiming unto you the testimony of God." Do you suppose for just a moment that the role that Paul had to declare unto them the testimony of God, the seriousness of that responsibility caused him to tremble? Well, now take that thought with you back to Daniel chapter 10. This glorious man that appears unto Daniel says, "I have been sent to you. I have some things to say to you. I want you to stand up." The implications are, I want you to stand and listen to what I have to say to you. And Daniel stood up, and he stood up trembling. What are the implications of why Daniel's trembling, if not the importance of the words that this glorious man has to say to him? Now Daniel has understood some things. The thing, as it discusses in verse 1, of great warfare. This glorious man is going to tell Daniel some things about this that would continue to cause him to shake or to tremble. What is it that the glorious man is going to tell Daniel about in Daniel chapter 10, chapter 11, and chapter 12? You answered that a while ago, Randy. That's right, about the end times of the Jewish system. And he's telling Daniel, this is a long way down the track, but here's what's going to be. And he's telling him in prophecy what time is going to mean. Down the track of time, here's what's going to happen. Now in our study last Wednesday evening, we emphasize that the time, or this time element, is impressive. When I was studying for the lesson last week, I had studied in times past such passages as Galatians chapter 4, verse 4, "In the fullness of times, God sent forth His Son Such passages as Mark chapter 1, where Jesus said the time is fulfilled. Numerous other passages where Jesus said, mine hour is not yet come, in the Gospel of John. And then in John chapter 12, mine hour is come. All of those passages I had studied, I thought, and studied very carefully to understand that Jesus is identifying a frame of reference that events were to transpire. But it had never occurred to me just how specific that frame of reference was. Right down to the year, right down to the week, right down to the event happening, the very hour. Jesus knew those things as if they were on a timeline. And he knew them as if they were on a timeline because indeed they were. Now, this vision that Daniel has of this glorious man appearing to him is telling Daniel some things very specific. They're specific about the destruction or the fall of this nation of people. This people who had been God's people. But down the pike somewhere, they're not going to be God's people anymore. Now Daniel is understanding some of these things. He's getting the point. And in the text, and I forget where it was, maybe you could find it for me right quick, where Daniel understood these things and it made him sick. It made him sick. Why? Well, because of the destiny of these people. Just how horrible it was. It wasn't just simply the image that was presented to him or the vision that he saw. It was the facts that were presented to him. That this nation of people were going to endure some horrible things before they were brought to an end. Randy?
It made him sad in the same way that Jeremiah was sad.
Yes, yes. Yes.
A lot of people are going to die.
And not knowing all the ifs, ands, and buts about how that's going to come to pass.
But also knowing that this is your people.
Yes.
This is your family.
Yes.
Your bloodline.
That's right.
People you love.
That's right. And so Daniel is trembling. If you receive bad news, really bad news, wouldn't that kind of cause you to buckle at the knees? And wouldn't it cause you, perhaps, if somebody were able to get you up, would you not be so shaken you might be trembling? Bruce? Okay. Yes, Daniel fainted and was sick certain days. Then I rose up and that's right. That's the one I was thinking about. Yes, thank you. David? Certainly. Yes. Certainly so. And the things that Daniel has made known so far in this book are things of splendor and grandeur as he talks about the days of the Roman kings that the God of heaven would set up his kingdom. And the sovereignty thereof would not be left to another people, but it would break in pieces and consume all of these and stand forever. Right, exactly. Yeah, that's right. And that's why he's telling Daniel these things, so that Daniel can write them down and folks can benefit from them. Yes. Any other comment or question before we go on just a little bit? Yeah.
Before we get too far, what's always confused me is when I read the description of this man and then I flip the page, that is talking about angels. I see a confusion there, but when I read Revelation's first chapter, verse 13, that same exact thing that John said would refer just not to an angel, but to Christ in Daniel. And when Daniel fell asleep, then Christ went away, and when he awoke, that's when the angel was tapping, so it was actually two people.
I don't know. I've read that. I'm not inclined particularly to that particular viewpoint. I was reading some material today on that that suggested that this glorious man that appeared unto Daniel was indeed the Christ, that Christ appeared in this image. I know that there are a couple of instances in Old Testament text where some take the position that Christ came in the person of, in the personage of men, before he came through his birth to Mary. And I've never held that position. And the other instance is the Old Testament character Melchizedek. Some take the position, instead of being actually the king of Salem and a priest, that he was indeed the Christ, and that's what was being spoken of in the Old Testament text of Genesis 14. That's troubled me, because when we read of Jesus coming, his birth upon the earth, I've never perceived that he was here before, that he was at the right hand of God, and the glory and so forth that he discusses are not the right hand of God, but in heaven with the glory. That's discussed in John 17 when he says or prays to the Father that he might be glorified with the glory that he had with the Father, which indicates to me that he had not come into the earth before. Now, there may be an exception to what I'm saying in that when he came through his birth unto Mary, or through Mary, that he came in human form. He took upon himself the flesh of a man and so forth. And that might be different from this text. I just not landed on that, Ken, to take the position that this was the Son of God himself. I think, moreover, you mentioned that later on we see this in Daniel 10 presented as an angel. And that's my position on who this person that appears to him earlier in the chapter is an angel. Now, we do know that angels can take upon themselves the forms of men. The angels, for example, that appeared unto Abraham in the plains of, what was it, the plains of Mamre, I believe. They appeared in the form of men. So I think sometimes that's the way that angels present themselves. That could be the case here. Let me underscore could be. That could be the case here, where a man presents himself as a glorious man, maybe an angel. I don't know. I haven't helped you in answering your question. I've read commentators who took that position, but it just never did seem proven in my mind.
Yeah, it's just because Revelation chapter 1, verse
3, right,
John describes the Christ.
Right.
It's exactly.
It's described the same.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're only human. I mean, to understand that,
yeah,
that's an almost stark resemblance.
It is. Now, whether it's exactly the same personage or not, I don't know. It's described the same, I grant you. It is. It's described the same, and the positions that I read this afternoon cited that passage. And it may be. It may be. I don't know. Anyone else have a comment on that? No. Well, you're a lot of help. Randy?
I had a question. In verse 2, are we to assume that the mourning had to do with what happened in chapter 9? Or do we know what his mourning was about?
I don't know the answer to that either. I read some speculation on that, but I don't care to speculate. I don't know what the mourning was for, unless it had to do with, as you mentioned, the things that are discussed in chapter 9, the prayer of Daniel. Certainly it's involved mourning. And it involved mourning as we see the confession of sin expressed in Nehemiah, what is it, chapter 9, and other such passages where the confession of sin was made. And the prayer of Daniel is a lengthy confession of sin. So it may have been that. It very well may have been the latter few verses of the 9th chapter, the 70 weeks being discussed, knowing what's coming, that caused him to mourn.
Or just verse 1.
Well, yeah, we're going to talk about that in just a little bit. Go ahead, Randy. Okay, Jenny. The first year of Darius from the 11th chapter, verse 1. Could very well be. In fact, I think that it is. As you end the 11th chapter, as you end the 10th chapter, It seems to extend on down the thought into the 11th chapter, verse 1, where it identifies for the first year of Darius the Mede. Okay, and the ninth chapter does?
Well, the ninth chapter says that that's when Daniel got this other vision.
Yeah.
The first year of Darius. And then we skip to the third year of Cyrus. I just wanted to know how much time there was between those two.
Well, I've got the third year of Cyrus marked as about 536 B.C., and the first year of Darius about 538 or 39.
So there's... Mm-hmm.
Be 3 years after, about so. Yeah.
So the 3 weeks of mourning are probably not for the 70 weeks unless he waited 3 years to mourn 3 weeks.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. That's entirely possible. Yeah. But we're still left wondering, why was he mourning? And we might speculate on that. Many commentators have. I've read some again today, but I'm not so sure that I care to speculate on the why. Why was he mourning? The only indication that I would have is the confession of sins that have been identified in the ninth chapter, and perhaps the things that the angel has revealed to him in the past, and the things that are now being revealed to him. It's becoming clearer. I think even in our study, it's becoming clearer that Daniel is understanding what's about to happen to his people. Yeah, Ken?
Towards the end of his prayer, what was his passion? What was he wanting from God?
Well, let's go back and look at it. He's wanting, as he confesses the sin, to understand these things. Verse 20, let's begin there, of the ninth chapter. I'm sorry. Verse 20. And while I was speaking and praying and confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel and presenting my supplications before Jehovah my God for the holy mountain and of my God, yea, while I was speaking in prayer, the man Gabriel, whom I had seen in the vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly, touched me about the time of the evening oblation. And he instructed me and talked with me and said, O Daniel, I am now come to give thee wisdom and understanding. At the beginning of thy supplications the commandment went forth, and I am come to tell thee, for thou art greatly beloved. Therefore consider the matter and understand the vision. So Daniel has been confessing his sins, and he wants to know. He wants to understand. And the angel says, that's why I'm here. I've come to help you to understand the vision.
In his prayer, did he pray for God to allow the temple to be restored?
I don't think so. If he did, I've missed it. Now, we might want to go back and read it. It's been a while since I studied the earlier verses of the ninth chapter, but I don't think so, if memory serves me correctly.
They were building it and it stopped, right?
Yes.
Could that have been his warning too, that in the third year of Cyrus,
that's possible. That's possible. Of course, right. That's right. And of course, Nehemiah talks about that in the, second chapter, I think, where Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem present opposition to the building of the temple and the walls around the temple, I should say, the city, and make fun of them and say, even if a fox go up on that wall, it'll fall down. You remember all of that. And so it could be that he's mourning over that. I hadn't really thought of that, but I suppose that's possible. Peggy, question or comment? Thought I saw a hand. Okay. Well, let's look back at the text for just a moment. I got down to what, about verse 12? It says, Then said he unto me, Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that thou didst set thy heart to understand and to humble thyself before thy God. Thy words were heard, and I am come for thy word's sake. Now we saw that at the concluding verses of the paragraph preceding the discussion of the 70 weeks in chapter 9, that Daniel is wanting to understand these things. And the angel, or this glorious man, says, I have come to tell you, to explain these things to you, so you will understand them. Now, in verse 12, that would be comforting, no doubt, to Daniel, who is trembling because of the presentation of this glorious man. I've come to tell you the very things that you've been asking about. So Daniel doesn't have reason to be afraid. It says, but the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me. Now let's pause there. This verse presents obviously some difficulties, but we must come to some kind of conclusion as to who the prince of the kingdom of Persia is, because this becomes the reason why this glorious man, as it were, has delayed in his coming unto Daniel. The prince of the kingdom of Persia. Somebody help me. Who do you think that is?
Cyrus,
the king of Persia. Any other ideas? Okay, go ahead.
You know, it's interesting how wrapped up Barnes gets in this, in making a mess of this whole thing.
Well, careful.
He mentioned Cyrus, the king of Persia, in verse 1, and now he talks about the prince of the kingdom of Persia. How could it be anybody other than Cyrus?
Well, of course, I agree, but I think Barnes makes an argument that it's talking about an angel that's being competed with, which, if we understand the context, I don't exactly fall out with that, but I think it's foreign to the immediate context that Daniel is discussing. But even so, if we identify the prince of Persia, this glorious man said, I would have been here sooner, but I was fighting with the prince of Persia. What's the significance of that to Daniel? Randy? I was afraid of that.
I just was going to ask, how can we assume that the prince of Persia is the king of Persia? Isn't the prince the son of a king?
Typically so. But as we have discussed in the 70 weeks, in the verses 24 through verse 27 of the preceding chapter, we read of the anointed one, the prince shall be 7 weeks. This is in verse 25. And then you see again at verse 26, the people of the prince shall come and destroy the city. And the people of the prince, I believe, is identifying those who would follow Titus, the Roman general, who would come and destroy the city. But he was the son of Caesar, so he bears the significance that you've identified. Now, still, again, we've got to ask the question, the prince of Persia, who are we talking about? Now that I don't remember. I don't know. I can't answer that. Richard?
I was going to say, if we were to do a word study on the word prince throughout the Bible, we would probably find that there's a lot of usage that is the same as with the word king. I mean, Jesus is called, at least in one of our songs, called Prince of Peace. But Jesus is King of Kings, Lord of Lords. The word prince in biblical speech is many times synonymous with king. It simply means a ruler or a lord.
Well, it does in Isaiah 9. If you'll turn to Isaiah 9, Randy, and notice verse 6 beginning. I don't know if this answers your question or not, but it uses similar terminology. It says, for unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and of peace there shall be no end, upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom, to establish it and to uphold it with justice and with righteousness from henceforth even forever. The zeal of Jehovah of hosts will perform this. Who's being identified in this context? Jesus is. But you'll notice he's called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. So the terminology here is used, especially in the latter part of verse 7, to identify a king. And that's consistent, I think, with what Richard has said. Jenny? Well, now, that's a good question. And why would you speculate on that?
Michael is mentioned in verse 13 and in verse 21.
Right.
And if that's the same Michael that's in the rest of the Bible, that would appear to be an angel.
Yes.
And it says Michael is one of the chief princes, but in verse 21 it says Michael, your prince.
Okay. Now you've asked the question that I've asked.
Michael's a Semitic word, so it's not Persian.
Oh, well, I thought you said it's a submitted word. I didn't understand you.
Semitic.
Yeah. Okay. That does make all the difference in the world. Jenny's question is essentially the question that I've asked. When he talks about the prince of the kingdom of Persia, we've got to identify who that is. Yes. Okay. Yes. 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 You've got an ongoing battle that takes place here that I think, I think it's something that follows a little bit deeper than just fighting against a king on the earth. Randy?
So, could we assume that the prince is being used as representative?
Yes.
The prince would represent the king, even though he's not the king to represent. So, Michael being a prince, one of the chief princes, meaning one of the representatives of God, is fighting one of the representatives of Satan.
All right. Right.
Satan has angels.
He sure does. 2 Corinthians 12. Now we're getting the point.
So we've got a satanic angel fighting against God's angel.
All right. Now I think that's the kind of the point we need to follow here. And what's this going to result in? Well, let's look again at the text. It says, "But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 1 and 20 days. Now, just to be honest, I'm not sure I know the significance of the 1 and 20 days. Maybe you've read something that has some bearing on that. Chris? No? I don't have an idea why the specific time frame of 120 days. In fact, I've not read anything that would indicate anybody that does. Jenny? So it may have been 120 days from the time the supplication went out?
So 21 days.
Okay.
So that's in 3 weeks. As soon as Daniel started his mourning, then the angel...
1 and 20 days, that's right. Yeah.
And the angel of Persia resisted him. He didn't want him to explain things to Daniel.
Okay, I think that's right. I think that's right. And the why is... why wouldn't he want Daniel to know these things?
Sometimes satanic forces just have to fight against us.
All right. I think Keita's got this nailed down. Let's turn over to Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6. You're familiar with this text, beginning at verse 10. He says, "Finally be strong in the Lord and in the strength of His might. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For our wrestling is not against flesh and blood, but against the principalities, against the powers, against the world rulers of this darkness, against the spiritual host of wickedness in the heavenly places. Wherefore take up the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand in the evil day, and having done all to stand, stand therefore." Who are we fighting against?
Principalities
and powers and so forth. The battle is not that we're fighting a physical enemy. We're fighting a spiritual enemy. And I'm not so sure that though there was reality with the kingdom of Persia involved in this as a hindrance to the things that the angel is trying to reveal to Daniel, I think it plows just a little deeper than that. Pardon me?
That tends to raise the question. That has to consider Michael. Not only has he raised the word to study it to help us arm ourselves, so then there are, this is a question, there are unseen forces.
Yes. Yes. Now, you're getting where I kind of want you to be, but you're ahead of the charts. That happens sometimes. Turn over to Hebrews chapter 1. And look, if you would, please, at verse 13. The first chapter of the book of Hebrews is a comparison of Jesus and the authority that He has over that of angels. Now, why would there be such a comparison if angels do not have power and authority? But Jesus exceeds their power and authority. Which of the angels did He say? And so forth. But in verse 13, you will note, "But of which is the angels hath He said at any time, sit thou on my right hand till I make thine enemies the footstool of thy feet." And then He says, "Are they not all ministering spirits sent forth to do service for the sake of them that shall inherit salvation?" Now, I'll just be honest with you. I don't understand all I know about the work that angels do. But what we do see in the context of Daniel chapter 9 or chapter 10 is the work of an angel. An angel is communicating some things to Daniel that he needs to know. And he was hindered in coming to Daniel, and Michael the archangel helped him. Now, what we want to notice in that is that the work of the angel was going to be accomplished. It was. Chris and then Bruce.
Obviously, the angels did engage in spiritual battles. Did Revelation 12:7 supply that point as well?
Well, read that for us. I think so. Yes, I believe that's right. Now, I want to get to some questions that I've got here. This one right here. As Daniel prays in faith, sometimes we don't understand just how far-reaching the providence of God is. This time element, and I know we're out of time, but I want to just very quickly throw this in. How many arrangements may there be in progress designed to answer our prayers, and we don't know anything about it? Have a clue. How many agents may be employed to bring about an answer to the things that we pray? We don't have a clue. And the third question, what mighty obstacles may have to be overcome? What kind of changes be made, and what kind of influences exerted while we are suffered to pray and fast and weep amid many discouragements and many trials of our faith and patience? God allows us to pray. He may allow us to even agonize over things that we pray for, while at the same time, there are things that are working behind the scenes to bring about the very thing for which we're praying. Now that's encouraging to me, and I think that's what we see in Daniel chapter 10. Daniel has prayed. He wants to understand these things. There are some obstacles in the way, but those obstacles will be removed. Okay? Any questions or comments? Randy?
Just one more thing about that. The Prince of Persia.
Yes. 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 And I think that's what you've got. I think you're right. Yeah. Yeah. You're getting the picture. That's it. I think that's it. And that's why the difficulty over the angel of Persia and the prince of Persia. That's why some believe that it's an angel.